Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. Good to be with you once again. And, Paul, did you know that I published an episode today, last week's episode today, and do you know that was our 100th episode?
Wow, no, I didn't know that.
We have 100, a lot of people, a lot of fun, a lot of learning.
You know, that explains something. There have been a whole crowd of people here gathered all day today. So there they are. They've burst into applause. Thank you. I didn't know what the occasion was, but 100th episode.
Yeah. Reminds me of the old TV shows when you'd go to the TV show and they'd have to sign up their laugh.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know? Laugh. Applause.
You know, that was a joke. But I plan on to continue with many episodes coming up in the future. I so enjoy this medium of podcasting. Today, we have a most special guest, Anmol Singh, who comes to us with multi-varied successes, as well as a new book, Prepping Yourself for Success, 10 Keys for Making It in Life. And for that reason, I would like to talk about investing in yourself today, a subject which I know Anmol is highly endorsing. Just a bit about Anmol before we begin. Anmol Singh lives in Long Island and works in Long Island. He has coached and trained more than 1,000 traders and investors in the complicated and stressful business of trading in the market. He is founder and CEO of LiveTraders.com, which has been voted the number one trading education firm for 3 consecutive years. Anmol wears several hats as he runs multiple companies. I don't think he sleeps. I know he told me he's going to eat in an hour and a half, and that will be 8:30 his time. But his passion, although he runs these companies, his passion seems to be about helping others be successful in business and life. And that is what we will chat about today. Anmol Singh, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie. I'm so glad you could join me today.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, I am too. I'm really looking forward to chatting after I've read pieces of your writings and looked at your website. I'm very excited about what we can talk about. You know, the idea of personal development has probably never been so strong as it is today. I mean, all you have to do is look in a bookstore, that is, if you can find one. But I understand your goals for developing people in the professional world of training. But tell me, what prompted you to move into the personal development sector as well?
What really got me interested in the personal development sector is because I work with, you know, traders and investors who run, you know, multi-million dollar portfolios. And what I noticed was I was helping them with behavioral and psychological issues. And most of the concepts that I was using to help them succeed and be more disciplined in their life and in trading are actually concepts that are applicable to people in their daily lives. So I think that really got me interested how the same concepts that I was using to help people in the trading and investing industry are actually applicable to make our lives much more better and much more successful.
That's interesting because I usually hear the opposite. I usually hear that what works in personal development also works in business. Rarely do I hear what works in business works in personal life. So that's a very interesting observation that you made. I really agree. I like the title of your book a lot. I really appreciate the idea of prepping yourself for success, because success, especially personal success, requires some serious preconditioning. You have to be ready and prepared in order to before you can even move forward in life. Now, for example, my son is a professional athlete, and there really is no comparison of the number of hours he spends preparing and prepping to the hours he actually spends playing. How important do you see the act of prepping yourself before jumping off into the middle of a new endeavor?
Right. I think preparing is the key because, you know, once you prepare for success, what also you do is not only do you prepare, like, you know, practical steps, but you prepare yourself emotionally for success, right? Because there's so many different types of success. There's financial success. I mean, I can give you strategies for that, but then if your mindset is not there, if you're not, you know, fully there, everything that you get success on, it's not going to be lasting success. You're going to get quick success, but it won't really be, you know, lasting long-term success. So for you to have that, you need to also, you know, be mentally prepared for that and know what you're getting yourself into, because, you know, achieving success is one thing, but then, you know, keeping it is like a whole different ballgame. And I think that's something that people need to prepare for. Just like we take the example of lottery winners, right? People win lotteries and they say they win millions of dollars. What happened to them, most of the people who win lotteries? I mean, survey shows most of them are back broke because they never prepared for it. They just got it, but, you know, they never
and just started spending.
That's something, yeah. So then exactly. So they need to, you know, prepare for that so they're mentally, emotionally, physically prepared to actually keep that, you know, and sustain it.
That you talked about keeping and sustaining, and there's a subject that's related that you bring up in some of your writings, and that seems to be of significant importance to you, and that subject is self-discipline. Now, I've got to tell you, just the sounds of those words are terrifying to me. My personality type is one of those, on the Myers-Briggs, if you're familiar with the Myers-Briggs instrument, I'm what's called a P, which means I'm spontaneous and impulsive. Therefore, discipline is not easy for me, but I understand how totally related it is to preparation. So help me here. How would you define self-discipline, and how does one begin to introduce self-discipline in their life if they're a flaky person like me?
Right. I mean, you know, I think everybody has certain elements of flakiness. I do too. You know, and you're not going to be self-disciplined like all the time. You know, there's just, as long as you can stay disciplined most of the time, you know, and that will make the difference. So, you know, I know it sounds hard, it sounds boring, but it's really important. And self-discipline, the way I define it, is keeping your word to yourself. So that actually leads up to one of my success keys in my book, key number one, which is integrity, you know, which is doing what you said you were going to do and then doing it when you said you were going to do it. You know, because if you do that, you know, it's hard not to be self-disciplined, right? If you say, okay, I'm going to do this by X date and you actually do it, that takes discipline. So integrity is the key word there. If you can live with integrity and, you know, keep your word to yourself and to others, I mean, that is a sure way to keep self-discipline. So, and, you know, people would say, oh, you know, I always keep the word to myself. But really look into your life and see, you know, where you have a lack of integrity. Because everybody does. You know, take this example. Let's say somebody calls you and you said, okay, let me call you back in a couple minutes. And you never do, right? And or you were supposed to email somebody and you never do. Maybe your parents, your mom, somebody were calling you and you said, yeah, I mean, I'm going to call them back. And then you never did. So those little things, when you don't keep your word to yourself, it slowly degrades your integrity. And when you slowly start degrading your integrity, you yourself stop believing in your own word. And that's what creates lack of self-discipline. So start with small wins. You know, if you said you're going to do something, do it. You know, even if it's like making up your bed in the morning, you know, you start there.
Yes.
Those quick
yes.
wins, and that builds confidence.
So, I was wondering, is there like when you're working with self-discipline, is there a list that you prepare that you're going to follow, that you're going to say, these are going to be the elements that I'm going to focus on? Or what does it look like, you know, to a person like me, what does it look like to be self-disciplined other than keeping authenticity and my integrity?
Right. I mean, I think the main key with that is to first, you know, notice where you have lack of integrity and then restore it. Because here's what most people do. When they don't do something, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, I said I was going to do that. I didn't do it. You know what? I'll do it tomorrow and postpone it. Right. They postpone the action. They say, I'll do it tomorrow. You know, I'll start it on Monday. Or, you know, they might just apologize. Maybe they were supposed to call somebody or meet somebody. They didn't. They said, oh, I'm sorry about that. You know, I'll do it next time. But sorry doesn't change anything, right? So what you have to do is you have to restore your integrity, meaning you put concrete steps to ensure that doesn't happen again. So a classic model to restoring integrity, say, hey, here's what I was supposed to do. I didn't do that, and the impact of that was that, you know, I kind of felt bad about it. And what I'm putting in place to ensure that doesn't happen again is X. So maybe, let's say you were supposed to call somebody, and, you know, you forgot to call them, right? So instead of apologizing, you say, hey, I know I was supposed to call you. You know, this is the impact on you. I probably kept you, you know, you were probably waiting for my call, stuff like that. And then you say, but here's what I'm putting in place. Next time when we have a call, I'm going to make sure I put it in my calendar so that I get notified that I have a call, right? And then that way, you're actually taking action to ensure that doesn't happen again. Because if you just say, sorry, you're probably going to do it again, right?
Yeah.
So if you say,
all right,
I'm going to put it in my calendar. Here's the action that I'm taking. Now you're ensuring that that doesn't happen again. So yeah. Even if it's anything, you could put it in, you know, workout, you know, your diet or anything like that, or what I'm putting in place, as if you're not able to eat well, which is actually one of my things that I'm, you know, going through right now, is...
aren't we all?
Okay. right. So rather than saying I'm not going to eat out again, say what I'm putting in place is I'm going to meal prep for the week, put it in, you know, prepared containers that all I got to do is put it in the microwave.
Yeah.
Now that's an action. Action is what creates success.
So it's this self-discipline really has a lot to do with forming personal habits. And maybe even rituals that we, or routines, maybe not the word ritual, but routines, that we follow these routines on a daily basis.
Right. It's like putting action behind your words, you know. So whatever you say, it should be followed up by action and concrete steps, you know. So just, I think a lot of people do this. My goal is to become a millionaire. Okay, great. But what does that look like? Let's break it down, right? In order to become a millionaire, okay, I need to make $4,000 a day. Right now you figure out how can I get that $4,000 a day in an average. So you break it down into steps. Okay, maybe I need to start a business. You want to start an online business, let's say, for example, right? Now what's the next step? Okay, I need a domain name. You break things down, right, so that you can actually have a checklist of things to check off and actually do. Most people just put this massive goal out there and they never get there because it's not backed by any action.
Yeah, that was what I was going to ask you. Is there necessary to have some things in writing and some actions that you can check off, sort of an accountability list that you can, and you're the only one looking at it. You can have an accountability partner for sure, but this is something you look at and you sort of nightly or in the morning sort of take a rundown and say, how did I do with these things? Do you suggest a process like that at all?
100%. I think, you know, I personally don't write it down right now, but I did in the beginning, right? But now I've got into the groove that, you know, I just kind of wake up.
Right.
Okay, here's kind of my day. Here's what my ideal day should look like, right? And then you just schedule everything in. Because if you just have a checklist, you know, most people will check off one or two things and, you know, and as the day goes by, your energy goes down and it all goes downhill from there. Whereas you take a step back and say, okay, here's my ideal day. My ideal day is I wake up, you know, at X time, I go work out, I go eat this, and then here's the five important things I need to finish today, right? Just five. Don't say, you know, I want to start $1 million business today, you know.
So, right, exactly.
Here's the three things I'm going to do today. Today's goal is to get a domain name,
right,
to get a website designer, and that's it. Three, four concrete actions that are going to move your goal, you know, move you towards your goal, and then you just schedule that in, you know. If your ideal day is to wake up, work out, and then, you know, finish these three steps, take a scheduler, you know, Google Calendar, everybody's phone has it, Apple Calendar, and just put it on there. Schedule your day. If you schedule your day and have that day, you're going to have your ideal day every day.
Yeah, and the issue is it is so easy to put off. Do you know how easy it is for me to say, okay, I'm going to quit eating cookies tomorrow? You know, I'm still going to have a couple cookies tonight, and it takes, you know, we call it discipline, but it takes a certain willpower to just get it started. And once you get it started, then you can get the ball rolling. But that getting started is a trick, isn't it?
Right, and you know, and also, like, you shouldn't be too hard on yourself. Like, if you do end up taking a misstep. But you just realize, you know, going back to the earlier integrity, is like you realize, okay, today I had a lack of integrity, you know, I had a loss of integrity, I did something I shouldn't, you know, I put my hand in that cookie jar, I opened that bag of cookies. So you just say, okay, I had a lack of integrity today, but here's what I'm going to do going forward. So maybe it is to not have any of those, you know, desires at home, so you're never tempted, because we all know you cannot just have one cookie. Once you open that bag, it's gone. So you've got to kind of make sure that the temptations aren't there, and that applies to business and that applies to anything. So if you're having a hard time being productive at your business, well, your temptations are your phone, which keeps giving you Facebook notifications, Instagram notifications. You think you're working because you're online, but you're not. You're not moving forward in the business. So take the temptations out, right? Cut it out. Set some time. Okay, here's my hour.
Yeah, don't buy them.
Right, exactly. Just if your hour of power is, let's say, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., that's your hour of power. You got to shut down your phone, shut everything down, and you just focus on whatever your goal is, be it working out, be it on your business, be it on something else, maybe be it reading a book, you know. But you got to take the distractions and temptations out, because you are going to be tempted. You're human. I'm human. We all get tempted. The only difference is, are you able to block it out?
I am, you know, one thing that I really like that you wrote, and I don't recall where I read it, and so I'm just going to kind of generally go over it. I can't quote it exactly, but you said, you mentioned the fact that you should take 1 hour a day, and 1 hour a day studying, reading, listening to podcasts, and then writing down in journal or some sort of, you know, I don't think you use the word journal, but some sort of writing and putting it all together. I found that to be really helpful, that I do all those things, but I do them randomly rather than thinking I am making a personal step forward to my personal success. If I take an hour out of the day for my learning.
100%, you know, and you're not going to be able to do it every day. I don't do it every day either. You know, the goal is just to do it often enough. Because think about it, most people, right, even including my own parents, let's say, most people never actually sit down for an hour and either, you know, write or kind of spend time with themselves and their thoughts. Most people never do that in their whole entire lifetime. So even if you can do it, you know, once a week, once a month, just kind of sit down and think, you know, where am I going from here, what my goals are, and how am I going to get there? And turn your phone off and just sit with yourself, turn everything on, you know, turn your TV off, turn everything off, and then literally just sit and just think. You know, it sounds very, like, easy. It sounds very simple, and it is, but it's powerful when you actually just sit in your room by yourself and just kind of think, you know, think, where am I going? What's the goal? What's the plan? And how am I going to get there? And then writing it down, again, most people never write down anything in their entire, you know, lifetime.
Really?
If you can even
really?
Do that,
I'm a writing fanatic, so I hardly even relate to that, because I do write. 100%. I do write daily. You know what I want to do? Because I want to jump into your book, Prepping Yourself for Success, 10 Keys, 10, where is my, I've lost the tagline, 10 Keys to Living the Life You Want. Was that it?
The title is Prepping for Success, 10 Keys for Making It in Life.
For Making It in Life. I want to talk about some of those 10 keys, but before I do, let's take a quick break here, and then we will come back and address that question. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I have a very special guest today, Anmol Singh, who is author of Prepping Yourself for Success, 10 Keys to Making It in Life, and we're talking about So far we've talked about habits and self-discipline that you need, and preparation. This word prepping that Anmol uses in his book is such a great word, that we need to prep ourselves for success. So what I want to do, Anmol, is I want to talk a little bit about your book, Prepping Yourself for Success, 10 Keys to Making It in Life. And although it's really not feasible for us to go through all 10 keys, we have chatted, and I know you have two or three main key ideas to consider that are most important or most essential on this journey of prepping yourself. Now, we've already talked about one, have we not, that integrity is one of those, one of your 10 keys?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, well, what...
The first one we already talked about, integrity, and... there's, you know, nine more keys, and I think each one of them is powerful in their own right.
So, I'm sure.
And, you know, each of those 10 keys have an important contribution to make, you know, in order to live like a fulfilled life. But one of the other ones is very simple, and we sort of touched upon that, you know, a couple of minutes ago, which is action. You know, now that you have integrity, you have those big goals, you have those words, you've been writing them down, you've been journaling, but then, you know, what about action? You got to follow it through with action, right? Execution of the plan is the key, because you can plan all you want, but if you don't take any action, it doesn't matter. Like, I can sit here, I can make my whole workout schedule for the week, I can make my whole diet plan for the whole month and the whole year, right? I can hire a personal trainer, but if I actually never go and work out, what's going to happen? Nothing. So same thing with business, you know? You have an idea, now what's next? Got to follow it through. Most people never get started. That's the problem. Most people, you know, sign up for seminars, courses, free webinars online. Then they see a Facebook ad. Then they sign up for another webinar. And then just keep doing it, but you're not taking any action.
Yeah, there's serial Tony Robbins and Brendan Bouchard people.
Right, exactly. And what ends up happening? You take one of their courses, you get another email. Here's my new course. And they take that one. And here's another email. Then they get hit by... you know, some other guy who's in the similar industry, and then they take this course, and they think they're working, it's not the person's problem or fault. It's actually human bias, right? We think we're progressing. We think once we finish this course, we've got this new skill, right?
Right.
Taking action. It really makes you think that way, you know? But it's really not, because you're still sitting watching something on the computer. You're not actually creating something credible. So you got to take action, and I know a lot of people tell me that, you know, hey, these courses online, they're scams, they don't work. I'm like, no, they work. You don't work. You know?
Exactly.
You don't work.
Exactly. I'm taking a course online right now that's forcing me to do the work, and I have a choice of doing the work or not doing the work. And when I do the work, it's a writing course, and it really does help me in my writing capabilities, but I'm doing what the instructor suggested.
100%. And the best way to do it is, like, even if you read a book, don't sit and read the book. Your goal is not to finish the book. You're not going to get any prize by finishing a book. Your goal is to, okay, read one chapter and put the book down, right? And actually use what's being taught in that chapter. Once you've actually used it in your own life, then you move on to the next chapter.
Right.
That's the kind of thinking you should take in life in general, you know, be it a course you watch, okay, watch module one. Now, just kind of turn it off and actually do what's been taught in module one. So
right.
That's the way to learn. Lifelong learning is you know, is key.
Now, you know, what do you think about accountability? Because it is so difficult, you know, we get into this New Year's resolution sort of thing where we get the resolution, but there's no action plan. And then there can be an action plan, but there's no such a sense of accountability, and do you find it's helpful if you have an accountability partner, or is it really conceivable that you can do this on your own?
You know, you can definitely do it on your own. That's not a problem. But accountability partner definitely helps. You know, 110%. But it's also the right type of accountability partner. If you got some person on the phone, you know, who's like your good friend and says, yeah, that's okay, don't worry about it. You know, that's fine, don't worry about it, don't be hard on yourself. That's not really a good accountability partner, right?
And then at the same time, somebody who's too hard on you, like, hey, why didn't you do it? You know, you should have done it. You know, that's not good either. So you need to find somebody who you are on the same page with, and then you set your goals straight, which is, okay, here's how we're going to keep each other accountable. We're going to use this model of integrity, right? So doing what you said you were going to do, when you're going to do it. And then the accountability partner's goal is not to tell you what to do. It's just to ask you questions. Like, for example, let's say you are speaking to your accountability partner and you say, okay, I'm going to, you know, you're telling him all the goals. I'm going to create my website by this date. I'm going to hire a manager by that date. You know, I'm going to hire a manager. I'm going to start a website. I'm going to find somebody to do my digital marketing. So the goal of your accountability partner is to say, okay, by when, right?
Right.
Like, by when?
Yeah. And when are you going to talk to me about it?
Right. You say, by when? By when is the most important question that most people hate. You know, even sometimes when I was telling my accountability partner, yeah, I'm going to join this new gym that's opened up here. He's like, okay, great. When are you joining? By when?
Yeah, right. You know, it reminded me of something that, and boy, it could be off track, but you know how we fail to have accountability. How many times do we see people we haven't seen before and we say, boy, we have to get together. We have to get together again, and nothing ever happens. And you know what I've started doing? I said, let's break out our calendars and let's set a date. You know, if we both feel that we need to get together, right, let's set a date that gets together. You know, I had something, Anmol, that was that may be of interest to you, is that I had a life planning process. You know, I wrote a book one time, Getting the Right Things Right. What was the subtitle? Strategies for Reinventing the Life You Want. And I had four categories: passion, purpose, people, and power. And there would be certain activities underneath of each one of those that I would do in order to keep a passion, to be a passionate person, in order to have fulfill purpose in my life, have good relationships, and have good spiritual sort of setting in, as a power of my life. And you know what I did? Instead of going through and being really anal and looking at that list daily, I looked at, and there may have been a total of, gosh, you know, it was a lot. There could have been a total of 15 to 20 items on that list because they're in four different categories, and there would be four or five items per category. And I just allowed myself an evaluation system that was plus, check, minus. And once a month, I would just go through once a month and say, how did I do with this in this month? And it was just a monthly review. And I give myself a plus, you know, I'm doing extremely well, satisfactory, or I need improvement. And, of course, I gave myself, I could do a check plus or a check minus. But you know what, Anmol, even looking at it once a month was really helpful. It would remind me this next month, I really need, you know, I'm doing, it would be both encouraging, well, it would be encouraging that I was living up to the goals that I was trying to accomplish, but it also gave me insight into where do I need improvement. And then I made a choice, Anmol. Was that a bad goal? Because sometimes my goals are bad goals. Was that a bad goal? And then I'll just remove it. But if it maintains a good goal, say, I've got to make improvement in that area. But as simple as that, as simple as looking at something once a month was really helpful.
Right. Well, I think that's a brilliant way to do it. You know, I think it's really important too. That's actually a really, really nice way to put it. And also think that people, I think everybody listening can definitely relate to what you just said in terms of, you know, scheduling plan with their friends or family. Yeah, let's meet up. And they say, yeah, sure, let's meet up soon. And then that's it. Never goes anywhere.
No.
Right? But
no,
I think, yeah, putting that calendar out is something that I'm probably going to start doing from now on. Cause I think that's really important.
If I'm serious about it, sometimes it is just BS. You know, let's get together. Yeah, let's get together. And we're both looking and say, no way I want to get together. But if it's serious and you really do want to get together, then schedule a plan. I just had a friend that I haven't gotten together with for over a couple of years, and she sent me an email. She read a blog or listened to a podcast and said something about it and said, we need to get together. And I emailed her and we set a date. You know, it just the date is done, and so we'll get together. There's something else I want to bring up that I really like. It's a personal subject with me, so that's why I really like it. Mm-hmm. And I really like this, what you wrote. You wrote of a billboard that you saw that read, "Never Stop Moving," and it was at a gym, I believe. And that caused you to wish for a billboard that said, "Never Stop Learning." And I just think that would be really a really powerful billboard. I love that concept. And personally, I happen to be a very curious person. And as a result, learning is almost second nature to me. And I know you've written about this. And I wonder how you see the relationship between curiosity and learning.
Right. I think, you know, learning, most people think of it as boring, but it doesn't have to be, right? Because if you're curious about something, you know, what happens? You want to learn. Just like, and you're born curious too, you know? That's what I wrote in the book, that you are born right. curious. When you were a child, you were like, oh, wow, what is this, right? You look at different colors. You're wondering what things are. You're looking at every little item, you know, mommy, what is this? Daddy, what's that, right? And you're born curious. But then over time in our, you know, school system and the way we're programmed, the curiosity is bred out of us, you know, because they say, oh, don't ask too many questions, you know, sit in your line, stay in your line. And I think that's kind of what we're taught as kids, like, you know, don't ask too many questions, don't talk to strangers, don't talk to strangers. And you're kind of taught to stay in a certain way that, you know, if you're taught that curiosity is wrong, don't wander left or right, you know. I think the curiosity came out of us, but we're born curious, and we need to somehow get that curiosity back. Because when you're actually curious about something, you want to learn more. When you want to learn more, it doesn't feel like, you know, learning. It feels like discovering. And when you get to that point when it's not about learning, it's about discovering, you know, you retain things faster, and then it just becomes a more enjoyable experience, you know, and you grow faster. And lifelong learning is definitely one of the keys. Because, you know, in this fast-moving world, I mean, if you're taking your MBA 10 years ago, it doesn't mean anything right now. You know, like, things are vastly different in the business space than they were 20 years ago. So you got to constantly be learning and adapting. You know, that's what happened with a lot of the businesses that couldn't keep up with the social media space.
Right.
Because they thought, oh, I have an MBA from Harvard. Well, great. Market's moving in a different direction. You got to constantly be adapting and learning. Every single industry is constantly moving.
I think that was a really insightful distinction you made between learning and discovery, is that if we're doing learning, you know, we've got that book feel and we can all picture the geography class or the chemistry class that we took in high school that we didn't want anything to do with it. And if it's when it's taught right and when we're in the right situation, it is discovery. If it's taught as a discovery and how interesting this is. I know when I go on, I travel quite a bit internationally. And when I go on my, not my business trips, but my personal trips, I would go to a city like when I was in Amsterdam. And I looked at a map of Amsterdam and I saw that north of where I was staying had some interesting... just some interesting places that I might want to see, but I didn't take a route. I didn't take a taxi, or I don't even know if they have Uber. But I walk when I go there, and I just headed this direction. And I said to myself, "I'm going." I pointed my finger. I'm going this way, and I had no idea what I was going to encounter. I was just walking down side streets, down main streets, different streets, but I knew a direction. I knew if I just kept heading, I believe it was north. I knew if I just kept heading north, I would hit downtown Amsterdam. And it was delightful. And Mala, you know, the discovery and the learning of the culture and the way the kids play in the street and the way the markets are going, you know, selling street markets, selling their wares and laundry hanging from... laundry hanging across the street on wires across the street. You know, that was just, that was heaven to me. Just that kind of discovery of learning about another culture and doing it with a sense of openness. Nothing that, there's no particular thing. I'm not going out to see the Eiffel Tower. I'm going on the journey to the Eiffel Tower, and the journey to the Eiffel Tower is really what's important.
Right, totally. And I think that's great. That's the best way to travel, is just to, you know, not have any expectations or agenda, and just to kind of go with the flow, you know, and rather than, as you said, you know, rather than taking the taxis or, you know, just taking an Uber or whatnot, you just kind of explore, you know. And when you explore, you definitely, as you said, you discover a lot of things that normal tourists might not discover, because they're taking an Uber straight to that place, they're looking at that place, back to the hotel, and, you know, you're just seeing what everybody else is seeing. But if you kind of wander off the beaten path and just kind of go with an open mind that I'm just going to discover and explore, you're going to learn a lot more than if you just sit down and learn, right? So that's kind of the, that definitely fits into this, what we were talking about earlier, is rather than sitting down and learning, just go with an open mind, explore, discover, and you'll retain a lot more than what you will if you just sat down and learned.
We're almost, you know, I'm thinking here, we're almost contradicting ourselves, because we were saying about accountability and having some sort of listing or some sort of tactical accountability. But on vacation, when we make a vacation, we do more planning for vacation than we do for life. We do more planning of who we're going to see, where we're going to stay, and what we're going to do. And it just turns out this, you know, packing, unpacking, busy, you know, I need a vacation after a vacation when I take one like that.
Exactly. And I think that's, people are living it in reverse. How they take their vacation is actually how they should live their life, and how they live their, you know,
life. Their vacation is the way they should live their life.
Right. Exactly. I mean, if they live their life like their vacation, you know, like how they plan and everything.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's how you should be living your life. And when you take a vacation, that's your time to let the expectations go and just kind of enjoy yourself, you know, and relax.
Okay, I've got a couple more things for you. Here's a, this is a bit different tack. I'm really going to go off tack on the last question, off page on the last question. But in one of your blogs, you wrote about beginnings and endings, and that there is a beginning and an ending to everything we do in life, essentially. You know, which begins with birth and death, and that we have that, and then both are a natural part of life. But I was thinking as I read that, in my years, I've observed there's a movement from a beginning to an ending, and it is not sudden and definite. You know, it is not, this is what I'm going to do to begin. It's just not like this fiat effort, and this is when it ends. But what I was thinking of is it's more like a malleable transition. So it occurred to me, and I'm wondering your thoughts on this, if you agree, and if you disagree, please feel free to disagree. So it occurred to me that we're not talking beginnings and endings as much more like beginnings and transitions, because we are always transitioning to a different sort of outcome. And so my question for you is, in the field of personal development, how do you feel about, or what do you think about beginnings and transitions?
Right. I think, in my opinion, it's like, I think that, like, life in general is it's like a drift, you know. So it's always drifting, you know. It's always moving. It's always going. So it's almost like if you have, like, a sailboat, you know, and you put it in water and you don't tie it up to the ground, what's going to happen, right? That boat's going to float. It's going to drift away from the shore. So just like that, you know, life is always transitioning, moving, and drifting, right? And only thing that, if you don't do anything, what happens? Well, you continue to drift, and you continue to go the direction that you're going. So the only thing that can impact that drift is some sort of action, right? Because otherwise, it's always going to drift. Life is a drift. It just keeps drifting, and only action can impact that drift. So you got to take some action. Maybe if you're using the boat analogy, you got to, you know, steer the boat in the direction you want to take it. If you don't steer it, it's just going to drift away wherever life takes you.
I like that.
If you're okay with that, then, you know, then that's fine. And there's nothing wrong with it. People say go with the flow. You can definitely go with the flow. But if you're going in a direction that you don't want to go, you're drifting in a direction that you don't want to drift, you want to go north and you're drifting south, then what do you do? Well, you impact that drift.
by taking some action.
You know, I'm a strong believer in paradox and that two truths can exist at one time. I'm old enough now that I've seen that to be true, and there is a sense of which you can let go and let life. You can just sort of take it as it comes, but at the same time, as we were talking about earlier in the podcast, if you have these personal disciplines that are interacting with the core of yourself, what your core meaning is, what your core purpose, what your core desires, and your core goals, if you have those, there is a sense in which you can be free flow in that once you get that moving. You don't have to be this highly structured anal robot. You know, you can be a responder to the culture itself, and a responder and adapter, and we adapt to what is going on. So both of these truths hold weight at the same time. Did that make any sense, or was that just mumbling from me?
No, I mean, I totally make sense, and I think I like what you said, you know, when you said respond, because most people end up reacting, you know. So rather than reacting, you respond to the whatever situation that, you know, you're encountering. And there's a big distinction between what you said in terms of responding. I like that word rather than, you know, reacting.
Yes, absolutely, because it's thoughtful, and it has some kind of purpose. Okay, I have one final question for you that is off our list of, well, it may not be, it may be one of the 10 keys of life. It may be in there, but I don't know. And that is, you are an expert in the field that I want to ask this question about. This is your world. In your world of trading and stock markets and who knows what, because I have no idea what you guys do. It just is, you know, way too complicated for me. There are, I know at times in trading, just a boatload of stresses and anxieties. Did you make the right trade? Is this the right time to do it? Is this the right time to sell? Is this the right time to buy? And so there's just unquestionable stress and anxiety, and I know in your training you have helped people, your professional people, in how to deal with this stress and anxiety in the world of trading. How about dealing with stress and anxiety that comes with simply trying to live a successful life? How do you manage that when you're not accomplishing your goals, and maybe you're not disciplined like you would like to be disciplined, or maybe you are and things aren't happening and you're getting stress and anxiety? Do you have any advice for us when we get in that mode?
Yeah, I mean, I think first people need to distinguish between, is it really stress or is it just an obstacle? You know, because a lot of time what ends up happening is that people encounter like a little problem, little, you know, unexpected thing. They encounter like an obstacle that they, you know, didn't foresee. And then now they get stressed about it and they start saying, oh, I'm stressed. But hey, that's an obstacle. You just get over it, figure out a way. So I think the first thing you do if you're feeling stressed out about anything is say, okay, here's the issue, right? You should write it down perhaps. Here's the issue. And then you write down what you're stressed about, right? And most of the time, writing down will, you know, clear a lot of the stress. Because what happens is, when you're not writing or when you're not sitting with yourself, all you can think of is how stressed you are. Oh, I'm so stressed. When you actually start writing down, why am I stressed? Then you start thinking, why am I stressed, right? And then most of the time, it's funny, but it's like almost magical. When you just ask yourself the question, why am I stressed? Right, okay, here's the problem. Here's what happened, right? You write it down and you say, okay, what can I do about it? Right? And then you write it down, okay, here's what I can do about it. And then guess what? What you wrote down, what you can do about it, that's what you end up doing. And it's funny, it sounds so simple, and it's like, sounds like hocus pocus almost, but just the act
No, it doesn't.
Writing, you know, just the act of like writing down what I'm stressed about, and what can I actually do about it? It's like, there's a book I read by Carol Dweck called Mindset. So, you know, you need to have like the growth mindset rather than saying, oh, here's what happened, it's so bad. You say, okay, what can I do about it? You know, how can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? And what are steps I can actually take? And then you write down those steps. And then you say, okay, let me do at least two of these steps, and then I'll see. And then I'll think again if I'm stressed or not. You know, most of the time, just distracting yourself helps.
I really like the idea of stress as an obstacle rather than stress as this emotional, because it is an emotional, psychological barrier to moving forward. But when we look at, instead of stress, stress is almost impossible to deal with without meds and alcohol. And so those aren't right. The answers, you know. But if you look at it as an obstacle, then you can create some sort of means to overcome this obstacle and deal with this obstacle, or see, is it a game breaker? You know, maybe it's a kind of obstacle, you know, God forbid, but it's a game breaker, and you have to deal with that. But that's rarely true. The vast majority of the time, it is something you can work on. And so I think, you know, Anmol, I think that's really, really insightful, is that to view stress as an obstacle, not as an emotional consequence.
Another important distinction I was just thinking about was, you know, just the act of saying I'm stressed is basically saying you have no control. I'm a victim, right? Rather, the better word is I'm stressing myself out, you know, and you take responsibility for that. You are not stressed. Nobody's stressing you out, right? You're not a victim. You are stressing yourself out. So you take responsibility of that, and then, you know, you go back to what we're just talking about, distinguishing, okay, this isn't a stress. This is just an obstacle. You take it like a video game, you know. When you play in a video game, you die in the video game. You don't just quit and throw the video game away, right? You play again. You try again. So just like that, is you got to think about it in that regard. You're not a victim. You're stressing yourself out. You're in control. You have responsibility to fix your actions and, you know, your stress.
Boy, I tell you, you've really put me in a state of pondering, and I'm not allowed to ponder on the radio because that's silence. but that is absolutely true, that stress is victim. Obstacle is a proactive way, if you're proactive, unless you're overwhelmed by the obstacle and you just give up. But an obstacle, you say, okay, I have the wherewithal to overcome this obstacle, or to at least mediate it in some form. But stress, when you look at stress, is victimhood. And you're just feeling like you're the victim and that there's nothing you can do, and this is put upon you, and the world is falling apart, and you're Eeyore. That's really insightful. Anmol, you are brilliant. Tell me, your book, is your book out? I'm confused. Is your book out or not out yet?
Yes, the book is out, and it's available on Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And
I will put it in the show notes. Okay, and my producer wanted me to repeat the name. It's titled Prepping Yourself for Success, 10 Keys to Make It in Life. And from what I've chatted with Anmol, I think it's going to be a great book. And I will put how you get it on Amazon on the show notes, and how people could learn from training. What's the name of the company again? I'm so sorry. LiveTraders.com.
Live Trading.
Yeah. So I want to thank you. It's been a delightful show with you today, and I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed this chat.
Thank you. And I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie signing off. Bye for now.